Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, a podcast for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Colleen.
My name is Bridget.
Today we have on Gertrude Matche, who is just a powerhouse, amazing, vibrant ball of energy that we were graced with her presence for an hour to talk. She's a storyteller. She is a poet, an artist, an author, an entrepreneur. She has recently started her story circle, which was going around the country until the pandemic hit. Now she's doing virtual summit from the end of November through early December. And people like to say she is a speaker who has a vibrant bundle of African energy. And I couldn't agree more. Right, Bridget?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is so amazing. Just her whole story. And we didn't even get to talk about so many other parts of her life that are amazing.
Right.
So please, we'll talk about it in the episode, but make sure you look her up on YouTube and catch her TED Talks. Gertrude is her first name. Matshe is how you spell her last name, so that you could find those TED Talks or any other interviews that she has. It is so inspirational because you just hear about how she started. How really she had wonderful parents. I mean, so that is a really great plus that she had that. But just the gumption to say, okay, I'm going to paint these fabrics, or her family's spirit to, okay, we're going to get you into university, but you're going to work and you're going to make these crafts and we're going to go and we're going to sell them.
Right. Just starting to, you know, she was born in a small village in Africa. Just starting with very little food. There was not a place for education there, and her parents wanting more. Her parents teaching her, that if you want something, you have to put in the work.
And then she gives that back to
others. Right, she pays it forward.
Yeah, she keeps paying it forward in everything she does. And just her, just the whole thing with the businesses that she started, and we will talk about a few of those, but there's still so many that we didn't even touch on because we were only talking to her for an hour. So
and
take all day to talk about the rest of them.
When she started talking about her entrepreneurship, I love that she was like, my first $1 million company. I was like,
my first $1 million idea. And I was
one of many.
So amazing. Just the things that she's done. And I really, once this pandemic's over, I really want to take a walk on the wild side tour that she uses the money from that to give back to a community to help with HIV and AIDS orphans. And
I know we never even got to talk about that.
We didn't, but it's so amazing. It sounds like you also, if you are doing that tour, you are a part of that. You are getting involved in that part. And then you also have some really cool experiences, like they take you through different areas. You get to walk with lions carefully. I'm sure you're our instructor.
Yeah, that's scary.
You said you don't walk. I read up on it. You don't walk in front of the lions. You walk behind the lions but then you get to spend some really nice a few days in a luxury place. So it sounds really great. And she just gives, it sounds like just, like you said, just keeps paying it forward. So that is so inspirational.
We'll have a link for a walk on the wild side in our show notes as well. You know, so we're going to let her just jump in and tell all about her stories and her life. Get ready for some great storytelling, guys. Welcome back to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, everybody. Today we have a great guest on. Her name is Gertrude Matche. And she is a woman of many hats that she wears, and she's going to talk about them all. But one of the ones that we just absolutely got enthralled with is her storytelling. And she has several TED Talks that really just reveal her story and her life. And we highly recommend watching them. Welcome, Gertrude.
Thank you for having me on your show. This is an absolute honor.
Oh, we are honored to have you on our show because it's such a busy person, such an inspirational person. So we're so happy that you're here.
Thank you.
We kind of wanted to start in the now and work our way back. So right now you have Her Story Circle, which is going to be starting the end of November, beginning of December. Could you talk a little bit about what that is?
The Her Story Circle is a social impact movement that I created in July last year with a vision and a mission to connect 1 million women in a year by curating a series of gatherings, conferences, online summits. So we launched in Las Vegas in the U.S. So I came all the way from New Zealand, had our first conference in Las Vegas. The next one was here in Wellington, New Zealand. Then we went to Sydney, Australia. Beginning of the year, I had 15 events lined up. I started off in Norway, went to London, went to New York. By the time I got to New York, COVID-19 had caught up with me and bit me on the butt. So I literally had to put the brakes and double back and come home. Had a conference in Brisbane on the way home, another one in Hamilton and Auckland. So we had 9 successful events for a new venture. And so we've had to pivot, and we're now doing our first online summit end of November, beginning of December.
And when you say you want to connect 1 million women, connect them how? What do you want to see as a result of this or would like to see?
As you know, I come from Zimbabwe, and in Africa, storytelling is everything. We believe that a problem shared is a problem halved. So if you have something you've gone through in your life and you have the opportunity to talk about it to somebody else, they're now carrying the burden of that story with you. It lightens the load. So my whole idea was, I've been to a lot of international women's conferences in the last 20 years since I moved to New Zealand. And whenever I'm in a gathering where there's a huge feminine energy, I always used to think, what if we could do something more, you know, besides the speeches and talking and sharing? And so I came up with this idea that I would gather women to come and share their stories across the board, from business and entrepreneurship to health and wellness, family and relationships, social justice issues. In the creativity section, if somebody wants to come and dance or sing and paint a picture, they're welcome to do that. Spirituality. And I put it out on Facebook on the 14th of February. And with no advertising in 48 hours, I had 2,500 women respond in 280 locations around the world. So I knew I'd hit on something really sweet. And women are needing to use their voices for good. So what we do is, in every location where we have an event, we find a project that is focused around women and children, the elderly, the homeless, or the disabled. And we collectively curate all the stories into a series of books and magazines and sell them. And all the women are contributing their stories to help fund small grassroots projects. And we're looking for those unsung heroes, those women in the community who do things for the sake of the community with no expectation of thank you. Or it could be a woman who's got a soup kitchen, and if we donate $10,000, we know that 10,000 people got a meal. So we're really trying to quantify our social impact. And the other thing about our gathering is that it is a bridge for women in the developed world to connect with women in the emerging markets. So like I said, I'm from Zimbabwe. And throughout my career, I have set up women's cooperatives. I try and get women out of poverty in very small ways. You know, a gift of $500 to buy 20 sewing machines in Zimbabwe can change the lives of 1,000 women like this in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. So that's the other aspect of the conference. We are creating peer partnerships so we can help pull our sisters up and get them out of poverty. Mm-hmm. So that is our big, hairy goal and mission in the world right now. And when you look at where the world is going, there is a need for an injection of positive feminine energy. The Me Too movement kind of got me thinking, you know, when I saw women gathering and sharing their stories and their experiences, I thought, how can we transmute this pain into gold? How can women talk about their difficult life experiences, but from an empowered standpoint and in a space where they feel safe and they feel heard? So we're also there just to hold space for each other. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the mission. And some amazing things have happened in this short space of time. You know, we only got to operate for about 6 months before we stopped, but the connections, the messages I get from women from all over the world who have joined the movement, the things they've done by listening to other women's stories. We also try and run workshops. so that women have some tangible take homes. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you go to a conference and you see this amazing woman on stage speaking for an hour and you don't get access to her.
Right.
But imagine if she was to run a workshop for an hour and you could really pick her brain and go home with some tangible how-tos. Mm-hmm. So that's the other aspect of the conference as well.
And it's so amazing. And we'll have a link to all that in the show notes so that people who want to get involved or want to go to the summit and watch it virtually, go now that everything is virtual, we'll have that information. But if we could take it back a little bit, and can you tell us a little bit about your history growing up and how you became what people call a vibrant bundle of African energy?
The honest truth about that quote is that I think I was just ADD and just never medicated. I was one of those little girls who was hyperactive, very energetic, going at 100 miles an hour from the day I was born, so my mother says. And I used that energy in so many ways. You know, I grew up in a small village with no electricity, no running water, but my parents managed to instill the value of education and that education was a key to get out of poverty. And so my mom and dad got a scholarship when I was born, the year I was born, actually. My dad had turned 27 and he got a scholarship to go and study in London. And he decided to take his young wife and they shared this one scholarship for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
So they left me with my grandmother. I was 9 months old and I was the poster child for World Vision. We lived in this village where the only access to protein was eating grasshoppers or field mice. Cornmeal was our staple, which we would eat with salt water. So I was severely malnourished. If you see my pictures at that age, from 9 months until I was about 2.5, going on 3, my grandmother did the best she could with what she had.
Mm-hmm.
And then my parents managed to raise enough money for me and my sister. So I have an older sister to go to London. And our lives changed from that point. So my dad became a chartered accountant. My mother became a nurse. And we got to experience being out of Africa and seeing a different way of being, a different way of living. We came back to Zimbabwe or Rhodesia before independence when I was 6.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw me in an all-white school. So we had an apartheid system. Blacks and whites didn't mix. And if you wanted your kids to get a good education, they had to go to private school. And so we went to the most expensive private school in the country. And my parents didn't have the money. But what they did is they taught us how to make crafts. And my mother was the most amazing seamstress. She could knit. She could crochet. And we would go to all the white neighborhoods to sell with mom on a weekend so that we could raise money for our school fees. So my dad couldn't get a white collar job despite his qualifications from the UK. The corporate world would not employ a black man. So my father worked in a chicken slaughtering factory until Zimbabwe got independence in 1980. And that's when he got his first white job. And yeah, so we learned how to make up money for our own school fees from the age of 6. We were hustling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I look back now at every single point in my life, if I was to be asked to change any of it, I would say I would never change anything.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Because my parents gave me this ability that I could be dropped in the middle of the desert and I will survive somehow.
Yeah. And you carried that with you, you know, just after I've been reading about you and you carry that entrepreneurship that your parents instilled in you in everything that you do and all the businesses that you started. And to me, I'm just so amazed. Your parents, well, like your father, how did he know about the scholarship? How did that work out? Do you know?
My dad got a scholarship through the Catholic Church. My parents were Catholic. And he was brilliant. He was a man with a very brilliant mind. And they fished him out of the church, gave him this opportunity. And he ended up being the town clerk of the little town where I grew up. He was the first black town clerk in the country after independence. And when you have a role model like that,
mm-hmm.
I remember when I was 6, I just started school. And I think that's where my entrepreneurial spirit really got a bit of a spark. My father would allow me to go into his wardrobe on a weekend and clean everything up. and he would leave my pocket money in all of his pockets. I had to go through the whole damn wardrobe staking his he didn't believe in just giving us pocket money, right?
You had to earn it.
And,
yeah.
One day I found this old pair of shoes at the bottom of the wardrobe, and I was about to chuck them in the bin. And my dad walks in and he says, "What are you doing?" And the shoes were already being trashed. And I said, "Oh, they're old. They're horrible. You don't need those shoes." And he said, No. "Those shoes are magic," he said. And he picked me up and put me on his lap. And he pulled out a photograph in his jacket. And this photograph was of him standing on the steps of the Colosseum in Rome. Mm-hmm. This is in 1968. And he said, "Do you see the shoes in this photograph?" I said, "Yes." He said, "These are the same shoes. These shoes are magic." Wow. And at the bottom of the shoes were these old pieces of newspaper, which is why I threw them away. And he said, "I could not afford to buy a new pair of shoes when I got the opportunity to go to London. I got newspapers and I stuffed my shoes with newspapers. And all you have to do is to dream." Mm-hmm. He said, "If you can see it in your head, you can create anything you want. You can go anywhere in the world that you want." And it sparked my curiosity to travel and see the world. So he told me about the Colosseum and these ancient ruins. And it was like going into other worlds, you know, talking mm-hmm. to my father. And then he went to an auction one day and he bought me an old set of encyclopedias. And to make me read, he bought a globe. And I would have to close my eyes and spin this globe and put my finger and make it stop. And whatever country it landed on, I had to go and read up on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that curiosity to see the world started at a very early age. He used to call me his little Vasco da Gama, that I would travel someday. I put that on.
Oh.
And so effectively, I've been to 56 countries. I can't tell you how many villages, how many cities, how many towns in between. And I just realized how beautiful and how magical this world is. And it just opened my mind. And I could never go back to who I was before I traveled.
I feel like what you also say, I've watched your TED Talks, mm-hmm. about you're not, you know, people have told people in Africa that they are poor, telling them that, but they're not really poor. And you said the only thing that gets in the way is the education. And that is
and mindset.
Thing. And yes.
And having that abundant mindset, you know, like I cannot remember ever being poor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were catching anything that could walk, that was edible, we would eat it. You know, we grew up with food. I only realized we were hungry when we left Africa and we're living in London. I'm thinking, oh, damn, we had no shoes. We didn't have
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we grew up with a sense of abundance. And, you know, even my grandmother was very resourceful in her ways. Like she would wake up early in the morning. In most African villages, the little girls, you all have to pitch in with the chores around the homestead. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I's job was to look after the goats and the cows. And grandmother would wake up early in the morning and go and tend to her fields. And she would pick a watermelon before it got too hot and bury it in the soil. And by the time we got really hungry at 12 noon, we had to pellet all the baboons out of the cornfields as well. That was our other job. So we'd sit on this platform and the pile of rocks and get all the baboons, chase them out of the cornfields.
Oh, goodness.
And at midday, they normally fall asleep because it's so hot. And we would go and look for the watermelon. And she would have tied her headband on a stick in the ground. And you knew where the watermelon was buried. And by that time, it would taste like it had been refrigerated. It would be icy cold because mm-hmm. the soil was cold when she buried it. Mm-hmm. And we would sit there and consume a huge watermelon, just the two of us. And mm-hmm. that was lunch. Yeah. So, and mom was the entrepreneur. I have to thank my mother for everything she taught me. My mother could sell snow to the Eskimos. Most amazing saleswoman. And persistent. She would not take no for an answer. I was the younger of the two kids, so I would normally go with her. So she was working full-time as a nurse. And whenever she had off days or a weekend, we had to sell the crafts that we made. And we would go from door to door. She would have doors slammed in her face. A lot of European people kept dogs for guarding the home. And they would let the dogs out on us and we had to run. She had scars all over her legs from dog bites. I don't like dogs.
Emotional. Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, goodness. And she's just persistent.
Unstoppable.
Mm-hmm. What an amazing woman that got, got to call mom. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And I mean, you can tell in everything that you do now that has carried on. But what you do, and I'll let you talk more about that, all the things you have done, all the businesses that you have started have gone back to help other people. You have found ways to not just do this business, but the business also helps all these other people. Just like you said before, the women that, like, they're learning to make a craft. They're learning something to take back with them. So, I mean, I've got a list in front of me of all the things that, I mean, it's so amazing. The medical recruiters of New Zealand, I heard your story about how that got started. I was looking up the Wild Side, Walk on the Wild Side tours. Oh my God.
Those were amazing when you were describing them in the TED Talk.
I was looking them up last night because I was like, oh, I wish I could travel.
Don't worry, I'll take you to Africa when all of this lockdown stuff is over.
Yes. Don't offer. We'll do it.
But we will pay because we want to help other people.
Now, we will. Yes, yes, we will absolutely.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can really, any of them that you want to talk about and share how you did that and then how you're using this to help other people. So I know you said you started for profits, and I totally get why you did for profit. So that you could use that money to help other people.
Yeah, the thing about my career is that I didn't start as an entrepreneur. My formative years, I was in IT. My very first job, I'm a first generation coder. I program computers and BASIC, Pascal, and Fortran, and COBOL. If anybody out there remembers the first generation languages, I was one of the coders. And I got this job because my dad had lost his job when I was 17 and the bank was about to repossess our home. So my parents owned a 10-acre piece of land. They were market gardeners. They grew vegetables and fruits. And I remember my dad helped me gain confidence by forcing us to go and apply for jobs every school holiday, but not take the jobs.
Oh, really? Like the experience, gaining the experience.
No.
Oh, no.
That the corporate world is white. So we grew up in a black and white world. And he said, when you finish school and you finish university, you're going to have to stand up in front of white people and speak. So just go and apply for the jobs. And it was like a gang. I would be bussed off to the city every school holiday and we would just compete and apply for all these jobs and come home and see who got the most job offers from the age of 16.
Oh, wow.
And that school holiday, I could have been an air traffic controller. I wanted to be a pilot. So I was going to fly out of Africa if it meant I was going to fly the plane myself. But there was a height restriction. You had to be 1.7 meters tall. I was 1.3. I wasn't qualified for that. And so they channeled me to do an aptitude test to be an air traffic controller. I got the job. I applied to be a nurse. I wanted to be like my mom. I applied to be a COBOL programmer and an air hostess was the next one. Mm-hmm. And I liked the uniforms. And again, I was going to fly out of Africa. And my father sat me down and he said, look, you'll never be a nurse. You faint at the sight of blood. I know you want to be like your mom. Cross that off. He said, an air hostess is great. The uniform is great. You'll travel, but you're way too intelligent. You'll be wasting your mental capacity. What was the other one I said? Air traffic control. And then he said, there's a thing called a computer. It looks like an adding machine and technology is the way to go. He didn't even know what computers were.
Wow.
And he said, I think this is the job that you should take. And I listened and I was a terrible programmer. I had the aptitude to do it, but I'm a people person and being stuck behind a computer terminal churning out code was just so frustrating. And my boss, after a year, realized that I really had the ability to speak And he said, maybe we should channel you towards systems analysis and design. You're good at presenting and meeting clients. And that's what I ended up doing for the 13 years I was in IT. I went into project management. And when I look at all of the businesses I created, they were all technology-based. So I developed databases. If you think about, you know, when I got to New Zealand, my first job was in IT. My husband came to New Zealand as a doctor, couldn't get registration. And in the frustration, he got a job in Australia. And we thought the New Zealand Medical Council would take a few months to register him as a doctor. It took a year. So he was commuting between New Zealand and Australia for a year. And I was here alone with three small kids under 12 and just totally losing it. I had a full-time job. And I went to approach my boss that morning, trying to renegotiate my work hours. After 3 months, I was promoted to project management level from systems analysis. And I was responsible for computerizing the largest private hospital in New Zealand here in Wellington. Mm-hmm. And I felt I was of value to this company. You know how your annual salary is something like $70,000 a year, and your client is, you're invoicing $25,000 per month for your client. So I walked in with a bit of confidence and I thought, I'll just renegotiate. And my boss was in a bad mood that day. He just stood in his office and said, you don't have a choice. It's either you stay or you go. I need a full-time project manager. And I remembered standing in his office and thinking, this man is forcing me to choose between my children and work, and my babies are not negotiable. And I had read a quote in a book that morning, and this quote popped in my head. I can't even tell you the title of the book, but I will never forget the quote. It said something like, if a man kicks you on the butt, let it push you towards your goalpost. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, why am I thinking this? Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is the kick in the butt that I need. I wanted to go into business. And I just went to my desk, signed my resignation letter, and that was it. Came home. My poor husband had just come back from Australia. He was job hunting, so I was the breadwinner. And I said, I couldn't do it. My kids are worth a lot more than that. I'll go back to my art. Mm-hmm. So I'm a textile artist, and I started painting fabric. I painted 100 meters of material, went all over Wellington trying to sell this fabric. It would not sell. And then one night I had this weird dream of my grandmother. And in this dream, she was speaking fluent English. And she's the one who misspelled my name, by the way. I might tell you about the misspelled name at some point. Oh. And in this dream, she said to me, Gertrude, if you have a problem, break it up into small pieces. And she was speaking fluent English. She hated the British. She hated English. And I remember thinking, this mean. And I went back to sleep. When I woke up, the dream was as clear as day. I got my scissors and I cut the fabric into small pieces and I started making cushions. So people don't sew in New Zealand.
Wow. No one
Not does. Many people have got sewing machines. They're not going to buy a piece of fabric and make a cushion. So I made 1,000 cushions out of 100 meters of fabric and created a website and sold 1,000 cushions in 3 months at $25 a piece.
Wow.
And that's how I created my first business, opened a shop. The shop failed completely. For 1 year, I sat in the shop. All my sales were coming off the internet. A couple of people would walk in. And the beautiful thing about the shop is that it was 5 minutes from my children's school. So the kids could walk from school and come to the shop. It had a loft at the top where I had a little bed and a desk. And they could sleep or do their homework. And it was just so perfect. So I ran it for a year until my youngest son started school. And I thought, I'm just wasting money. I'll take the business home. But that's where I birthed the first $1 million idea, sitting in this shop, bored stiff with no clients. And I realized when my husband was job hunting that there were hundreds of vacancies for health professionals, both in New Zealand and Australia 20 years ago. And because I've got a human resources degree, I majored in industrial psychology and management. I had always thought I'd go into recruiting, but for IT workers. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, let me try health. And I just wrote to 5 of my husband's friends. And I said, look, there's an opportunity for work. Would you like to come? 5 of his friends said, yes. I placed 5 doctors in my first 3 months of business and made $125,000 sitting in my bedroom slippers at home.
Wow. Wow.
First $1 million idea.
Oh, that's amazing. And it's also I love how you say first.
My first, yeah.
That's only first.
Yeah, yeah.
That's incredible. And it just kind of kept rolling from there, right? You just kept coming up with ideas and ideas. If we could go a little further, I want to talk about you're 50 years old, you're living your best life, you're traveling. Can you talk about what happened at that stage of life with your heart?
Well, I think it was about 47, 48, our relationship, my husband and I just started to go in a very bad direction. And I tried to leave a couple of times. I'd leave and come back and leave and come back. And I'd always just wanted to keep my family together. And I thought I'll hang in there until my youngest had finished high school. And it got to a point where I got very depressed, to a point that I was thinking of committing suicide. And I kept having this recurring dream that I would commit suicide on my balcony in my morning gown, and my kids would come home from school and find me dangling on the balcony. When I had that dream three times, I realized my mind was taking me to very dark places, and I would rather be alive somewhere in the world for my kids than to do that to them. So I walked out of the relationship. We were married for 27 years. And I packed a suitcase, traveled for 2 years, just free-falling through the universe, really, and ended up in the U.S., in New Mexico. I got a job lecturing at the university, and every day after work, I would hike. I would go up the Sandia Mountains, trying to lose weight. My mission was to climb Mount Kilimanjaro for my 50th, and it never happened. And I got really ill. I started developing a terrible headache and a dry cough that only came at night. And my health insurance allowed me to go to a medical center, like an emergency center. And I was seeing a different doctor every time. And they would tell me it was altitude sickness and give me cough mixture and painkillers. And I would come back home, and progressively I got worse. And my kids said to me, "Mom, you need to come back to New Zealand. You need to get proper health care." And I was due to renew my work permits, so I had to come back anyway. It was in June 2017, just turned 50, and my daughter bought me this beautiful vacation to go to Bali on my way back to New Mexico. She said, "Mom, you've got to slow down. Just go for 10 days, relax, take it easy. I've paid for everything." So my kids by that time had grown up. My youngest was at university. My oldest was working. My middle one is the girl. She lived in Australia. She moved to Australia. And so I went on this vacation, and it was a 10-day vacation that turned into hell because I collapsed on the ninth day just before I was supposed to leave, walking in a rice field in Bali. And I woke up 5 days later in intensive care, and I almost died. And a number of things happened and on this particular event, which kind of always reinforces and reminds me that you have to keep giving wherever you are. If you can help somebody in life, you need to keep giving. My grandmother used to say that the universe is like a giant bank. You have to keep depositing good deeds, and they will come back to you tenfold from very unexpected places and not from the people that you help. Because what happened is whenever I traveled as a speaker, I would look for orphanages. Children are my passion. I believe children are the future. And I sponsor education. I had gone to Bali and had found this small little orphanage about 10 kilometers from where we were having a conference. And I had raised $1,000 to give away. And they had a website. And on this website, there were things that were very technical and gadgety, and I thought, I don't want to waste this money and buy the wrong thing. I'd rather go and talk to the people who run the orphanage and find out what they need. And they said, "How did you find us? We don't have a website." I'm like, "You're online. This is how I got your address." And it was run by these Catholic nuns. And they said, "We don't need anything on this list. We need sanitary pads for the girls. We need books. We need pencils." So Bali is very much like Zimbabwe. It felt very third world. Yeah. And I was glad I used my instinct, because the things on the website were very Western. We found out later that an Australian woman had gone and she created the website for them. And she made a list of what she thought they needed. So we're very
she didn't ask them. Okay.
No, she didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to the hotel and I'm sitting at a table with random strangers. And I said, well, this is what I'm doing for the day. It was the day before the conference. And on the table where I was having breakfast, started passing a hat around. And before I knew it, I'd raised another 2,500 from people I didn't know who were just inspired by what I was doing for the day.
Wow.
Three women said, look, we'll come with you. So off we went. We hired a taxi driver. We went and bought all of these supplies for the school. We came back with three van loads full of goods because we went into all the local markets where the locals buy. And we got our taxi drivers to do the buying. So we were kind of behind it. And we spent the day in this orphanage with 100 kids. I bought some fabric. I knew they couldn't speak English. So I thought, oh, I'll do a tie-dyeing little exercise with them. And each of the kids had to go and buy, get a rock or a stone and tie a bundle in this fabric. And I would splash yellow and blue dye and it turned green. I'd call it African magic. I terrorized these kids for that afternoon. And when we were leaving, I asked the nuns what else I could do to help. And they said, Gertrude, we have four girls. They've turned 18. And if we let them go, they will end up in prostitution. And I said, what will it take? What do you need? They said, if they could get to college. I said, how much does it cost? $500 US a year. So I came back to New Zealand and I raised the money to send these four girls to college. And I have a picture on Facebook of me handing my business card to each of these girls. And I said, I want to know what happens to you. Please keep in touch. I heard nothing for 10 years. In the 10th year, one of them found me on Facebook. Her name is Victoria. And she wrote this beautiful message and said, Gertrude, you are like my African mother. She says, the money that you paid for me to go to college helped me do a computer course. I have managed to put two of my little brothers through university. I now work for a cosmetic surgeon in Denpasar. If you ever come back to Indonesia, please come and stay with me. So I have this Balinese daughter. And so I run my writer's retreats in Bali, and I always stay with Victoria. But this particular trip, because my daughter had paid for this hotel and the spa, I didn't go and stay with her. But the miracle was that I hired the same taxi driver for the week, and we went and had lunch with her the day before I collapsed. Now, the taxi driver was picking me up at the corner of the street. He didn't even know which hotel I was in. I didn't have my passport on me. I didn't have my ID. He just knew my name was Gertrude.
Wow.
And this poor man didn't wait for an ambulance. Apparently, he threw me on his back, put me in his taxi, and he took me to the nearest hospital. And I woke up 5 days later, looked outside the window, and I'm in a high-rise building in the middle of a rice field surrounded by green rice. And I thought I had died and got to him. And I'm like, this is like, and I was in ICU. And he remembered Victoria and he went back to her and said, the woman I was with yesterday is in intensive care. I have no idea what her full name is. I don't know how to contact her relatives. I don't even know the hotel. And because I had taken my kids to Indonesia, they were in touch with Victoria on Facebook and she reconnected me with my children.
Wow.
And that's incredible. Oh, gosh. Because I don't know what they would have done if,
right.
Yeah.
I could have died and had a pauper's burial in Indonesia and nobody would have ever known what actually happened,
what happened.
To me.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible.
But that's part of, and I know I don't, I'm looking at the word for it. We're just people, when everybody that you meet, there's some connection you make with the person. And it's one of your talks and I'm looking in my notes. The magic of Ubuntu. Mm. Is that how
Ubuntu.
You say it?
Ubuntu.
It's kind of like the magic of that. And can you talk a little bit about that?
So Ubuntu is an ancient African philosophy. It literally translated, Ubuntu, Ngamuntu, Ngabantu says, a person is only a person through other people. So it's our explanation of the condition of being human, to be a human being. So I could not exist without your existence, and you couldn't exist without mine. We're reflections of each other. And in Southern Africa, when we greet, we say Sabona, which means I see you. And it's not the seeing of sight. It's an acknowledgement of your humanity and mine. And I believe that I'm a sum total of all of the people I've ever met in my life. This invitation, and thank you again, Colleen, for what you've done for me with this interview, is going to connect me with hundreds of other women who are going to hear this story, who would never have heard of me if you hadn't given me this opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I have a life that I go full circle with people. I don't meet people by accident. I always can connect the dots as to why we met. Mm-hmm. And you can't see it sometimes going in. You can only see it in retrospect, maybe a year, 3 years, 5 years from now. We could reconnect on this beautiful radio show. And I'll tell you, girls, you created something. You created a wave. The people who responded, help me with this, or help me build a clinic, or help me build a school. You just never know the power of the connection that we've made with this mm-hmm. interview. Mm-hmm. And so that is also the ethos of the Her Story Circle. The pillars of Ubuntu are empathy, mm-hmm. compassion, connection, and collaboration. Mm-hmm. So in everything we do as a group of women in the Her Story Circle, those are our principles. It's our strength as women lies in us working together, collaborating, and it's in these connections that we make when we meet in the circles and in the gatherings. I think a lot of women are starving for this. Mm-hmm. And I found it when we launched, just the response that we had, the fellowship, the sisterhood that has been formed in such a short space of time is incredible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's incredible that we somehow managed to go around in a circle back to Her Story, which is what you were saying, which is awesome. And again, so people know it is virtual. It's going to be November 28th through December 13th. And we want people to check that out, and your books and your TED Talks and all the million other things that you're doing, because it is an absolute gift to have met you as well.
Yes. So, yes, absolutely. It's been inspiring just to want to help people. You know, I think things that you say, everybody check out her TED Talks, because when you say that if you could help one person that needs food, or one young girl that horrible things are happening to her, just that one thing, if you can help just a little. And I think you also said in one of your talks about if everybody could give $1 to help, they would have that in no time. And I can't remember the story exactly.
It's about money, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not always about money. It's about ideas. It's about bumping into a stranger in a supermarket and smiling and seeing them and saying hello. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. I was thrown out of Africa for a reason, to spread this philosophy. I share it with everybody I meet. If I'm in the supermarket, at a bus stop, in the bank queue, I talk to random strangers. I'm that crazy woman who turns around in a lift and says hi or starts something. But because there are people out there who probably haven't even talked to anyone in a week, and you just don't know how you can lift somebody up mm-hmm. by just mm-hmm. your presence. Mm-hmm. So that's what I try to remind people about as well. It's not about money. It's not about giving monetary things. It's about connection.
Mm-hmm. It's about feeling seen and heard and acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And that's so true. And we talk a lot about that on the show too, because oftentimes women of this age range start to feel kind of invisible. Mm-hmm. And so it is important that people feel it kind of validated that they exist, and you know, that someone sees them. And that's a wonderful thing that you're doing. So thank you for that.
Yes.
Thank you for all that you're doing, because what an inspiration. And we can't wait to share this story.
I know.
Because I think everyone is just going to check it out and be like, wait a second, I need to know more about Gertrude, okay? Because it's just, I could literally listen to you all day. I could. You are such an amazing storyteller.
Yeah, yeah.
And also that your life has been so incredible. And just one last question, how is your health now? Are you okay now?
I am good. I am so good. I bounced back. My mother used to say that so long as you're this side of the grave, there is no stopping.
She's right.
Exactly.
Your mom is a little scared.
Oh, gosh. Well, we are excited. We're excited for the summit. And then I'm excited to hear about the next thing you're going to do, because it sounds like you just kind of roll it into something else. And isn't that what a great mm-hmm. thing we can all do, is kind of just right. pivot our way. Mm-hmm. So thank you for being on the show. We greatly appreciate it. Everything that you talked about will be in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. All the links and everything. So yeah. Thanks.
And
have a good day. Thank you so much, Gertrude, for being on our show, because you are a very busy woman. We know it. And we just appreciate you talking to us, telling your stories. And it is such an important thing that you do.
It really is. And it was a just very serendipitous thing to meet, to connect with her. Mm-hmm. And people check out her story community, because mm-hmm. it's connecting. She wants to connect a million women. And if anybody can do that, she can do that.
So. She can do that. So November 28th through December 13th is when that is happening.
Yes. And we'll have it in the show notes.
Yeah. Make sure that you check us out on all podcast platforms, Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, and on our Facebook, Twitter,
YouTube. Yeah, this will be up. YouTube. This interview will be up on the YouTube.
Mm-hmm. So we are trying to share our season 2 interviews on YouTube, and we have a few other things on there as well. If you want to catch some of our past recordings, our past happy hour talks and things like that, our live streams, you can catch that on there as well.
We can entertain you at home for hours. So don't worry about being home for the pandemic. Just check out our YouTube channel.
Just check out our channel. That's right.
And if you ever want to connect with us, like Bridget said, there's so many ways, but you can even email us at hotflashescooltopics@gmail.com. We are always happy to hear ideas, thoughts, and just suggestions on stuff that mm-hmm. you want to know about in primetime women.
That's right.
So have a great day, guys. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.